Hey everybody, this is Harvey Sluggo Wasserman back with you at the Green Grassroots Emergency Election Protection Coalition Zoom call number 174. We are starting off with 20 people and just going to rock and roll over the first hour. We have the great Roger Rappaport with Kevin Camps, two Michigan boys, who are going to give us a real tour. Also with Ron Leonard, the great Ron Leonard, one of the great founders of the Green Power movement. Both ideologically and in business, and we're going to do a real thorough exploration of the new Solartopia. We need to really understand what is happening. There was an article in the Wall Street Journal over the weekend about how the solar industry is getting just slaughtered in California because of the attack by Gavin Newsom and the California Public Utilities Commission. We'll come back to that in a minute. The second hour is a really deep dive, thanks to the great Camilla Reese, who has set up a tremendous panel on EMF, the issues with electromagnetic frequencies, a big issue right here in Los Angeles, in the courts already. Tremendously important, and also with relevance, and we want to touch on this with relevance to the spread of solar, because when they give you solar, when you get solar, they often try and put smart meters on your phone, which are really dumb because they emit electromagnetic frequencies that are harmful. So we will need to deal with that in the second hour. We have three very, very powerful, well, actually four, including Camilla, very powerful experts who are going to do a deep dive on that. And Steve, we want to create a separate hour URL for that second hour, if we can do that, so we can give it to the EMF community and they can use it as a tutorial going along. So it's great to have everybody with us. We're going to start with, first I want to say another Michigan person, Alyssa Matros has joined us. Alyssa, you'll be glad to know that me and Roger are united again here on the, as if it were the Michigan Daily 60 years later, and Kevin Camps is in Michigan as well. So what we're going to do now is we're going to start off, and I'm going to hand it over to Roger Rappaport. We are going to, and Roger is a world-class journalist, lives in Muskegon, Michigan. As I said, it was a year after me at the University of Michigan Daily. They didn't want to make him editor of the Daily because he's too good of a investigative reporter. They had just recovered from wanting to shut the paper down because I had written an article for legalizing pot, and the people who were at the university couldn't handle that. It did go global, that article, by mistake. And then Roger came in, and Roger had done some great investigative reporting on one of the regions. And they did not want Roger to be editor of the Daily, but he is a great investigative reporter, a number of books, a number of films, and has a piece coming out tomorrow in the Detroit Free Press about the need for Michigan to go renewable and to not blow $15 billion on the Palisades nuclear plant and two more so-called small mythological reactors that they want to put next door. So we also have with Roger, we have Kevin Camps, who's been with us many times, who's the great expert on Palisades, Davis Bessie, and many other of the geriatric nuclear plants that we are forced to deal with around the country. I will reiterate what I did last week. Oh, by the way, we will not meet next week. Next week is the first night of Passover, and I'm sure many of you will be sitting through interminable departures from Egypt, waiting for the food. So we will not meet next week, but we will meet the week after. It'll be great to do that. And so Kevin knows the detail on the Palisades nuclear plant, unlike anybody else. And Roger has, as I say, a major piece on bringing Solartopia basically to Michigan, as I have talked about doing it to Ohio. So, Roger, tell us, please, about this article you've got coming out and what it really means in the bigger picture. Oh, Roger, you're muted. Are you muted? Hold on. Got to unmute you here. Boy, it's always annoying to have to do that. Steve, can you help me? Can we get there?
I
There
get
we
it.
go.
I am muted.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Good. 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 All
Okay.
right. Great to have you.
So I just before this meeting started today, I got a note from Mark Jacobson, who along with Kevin is featured in this story that's coming out, and it's about the Palisades Project, which Kevin will fill you in. He's been working on this for over 30 years, and so he's probably the world's leading expert, not just on Palisades, but on this whole attempt to revive reactors that have closed and were scheduled for decommissioning. But I want to read this this note I just got. Harvey, you'll be especially interested in this, that my editor had a question. She wanted to know about, well, how can renewables stop a brownout or a blackout? And Mark just sent me this note from Stanford. He said, moving to renewables, including moving to storage, together with renewables, California's grid has been 100% renewable for 31 days of the past 40 days, between 0.25 and 6 hours per day, with no blackouts, even after half of Diablo Canyon was shut off for a week and a half ago. So this is just one more example of why the fossil fuel industry and the nuclear power industry are in a blind panic. They are totally scared to death because as of June, when the Vogtle plant in Georgia becomes the third reactor in this century to go live, fully operational, in the 21st century, there are no nuclear power plants under construction in the United States. That's the first time that that fact that that's happened since 1954, when the shipping port reactor opened. And Kevin, you are one of the people that has made this possible. There are many other people in this cast, but when you think about what that means, it means that not only have they given up on starting new nuclear reactors in this country, there was one in Idaho, one of the vaunted SMRs that Bill Gates has been talking about and putting a little bit of his own money into. It was shut down because guess what? The costs were out of sight, and that was the first of the SMR reactors. So the question is, why is this happening? It's because renewables are totally taking over in more ways than one. And I want to give you this one example. In Ohio, where probably the biggest political scandal ever in state history, which Harvey has written about beautifully, there were huge payoffs to utilities and lobbyists and so on. In Ohio, they actually have a law on the books that wind is banned in one of the windiest lakefront locations in the United States. That's how desperate the. So here's why they're panicking. The cost of the Vogtle reactor, which is the last one that's being built currently, which will open in June, the cost per watt, according to Mark Jacobson at Stanford, is $16. The cost for solar is $1, and the cost for wind is 70 cents. And here's the other part of it. A new nuclear power plant, like the Vogtle plant, can take up to 20 years or even longer. There was actually one that opened in Tennessee that took, get this, 42 years to open. The Vogtle plant was billions and billions of dollars over. That reactor and the South Carolina reactor that did not happen bankrupted Westinghouse, one of the most experienced reactor designers and builders in the country. So as a result of all this economic fallout, there's been this panic in the industry to try to stop nuclear, I'm sorry, to stop these fossil fuels. And there's no better example of it than right here in Michigan. And I'll just very quickly say that the attempt to spend, get this, over $15 billion to restart the Palisades reactor and build two new SMRs. Kevin has the exact numbers, but right now it's somewhere in the range of $20 to $30 million per job created. Just one of those jobs could create an entire group of solar and wind companies. And on top of all this, as my article points out, according to Mark Jacobson's research, the new grid that would be supplied primarily by wind, solar, and some water storage, hydro storage, and so on, would create 240,000 jobs in the state of Michigan. That's like, like one of the big three auto companies. That's how big it is. And not just in one area, not just in, say, Detroit or some of the big economic centers, but all over the state. And it would be reliable power. It would be power There would be no brownouts, no blackouts. There would be no carbon, which is not true of nuclear. Nuclear definitely does contribute to global warming. There would be no radiation waste. And on top of all this, the exact number is a little in flux, but it's something like at least 40% decline in power rates. And to boot, it's self-financing. So this is why the industry is so freaked out right now, because the economic arguments are getting weaker by the day. The new battery technology, the storage, which is the heart of the what would stop the blackout or brownout potential. There's new batteries coming online. I believe they're sodium
Right, sodium-based.
that are much more effective. So these states like Michigan have an opportunity to lower utility costs, attract new industry, create hundreds of thousands of jobs, and yet in this death rattle situation, in the midst of all this, the nuclear companies are, trying to get huge bailouts, guess from who else? The federal government and the state government, at taxpayer expense. And to kind of document all of this, the company that was running Palisades, the reactor that closed 2 years ago, Energy, actually closed early because they were having a lot of technical difficulties, some safety issues. So they got out of there early. And after the attempt to decommission the reactor began, the only company that was interested in actually trying to restart it, which is what the governor of Michigan wanted, is a company that has never built or operated a nuclear reactor. So if you can imagine this incredibly obsolete reactor with all sorts of safety problems and waste problems and so on, is being organized by a company that has zero experience operating or running a reactor. And I happen to be at the meeting where the two Michigan governors, now Energy Secretary Granholm and Governor Whitmer, were there. And I had an opportunity to meet some of these hardworking employees at Palisades. And I asked them, I said, well, are you considering bringing in a company that actually has operated a reactor? For example, in Canada right now, there are four reactors in a part of a 10-year process that are being refurbished. Each one of these refurbishments, this is an ongoing reactor with a very technically trained crew, that the reactors that have been operated for decades. They're taking almost 4 years per reactor. This very obsolete, decommissioned, potentially decommissioned reactor, Palisades, they're going to try to restart it in 1 year, huh? I mean, some of the spare parts were, when Energy closed it, they got rid of the spare parts for scrap. Now they're going to have to go back out and find all this equipment and parts and so on. So the 1 year timetable is completely unrealistic. So when I was talking to the Holtec people, I was asking them, I said, well, gosh, are you going to bring in anybody who's actually done this, who's run a reactor, who's actually, because nobody's ever taken a closed reactor, that was scheduled for decommissioning. It's the first time in the world this has ever happened. And they said, no, they're going to do it themselves. So this is an indication, I think, of wishful thinking. And the problem that the industry faces is, if they don't start refurbishing these old reactors, and nobody wants to build a new one because they're too expensive, the whole industry is on the ropes. And I think Kevin now can give a little bit more insight into why we're at this tipping point, so to speak, for the whole nuclear power industry.
Well, thank you. That's great, Roger. And Kevin Camps, as I say, we've met Kevin before. We have 41 people with us right now, and we're also live casting. Kevin is, as Roger said, a great expert on Palisades and David, especially the old reactors. We have 94 old reactors in the United States. They're the big ones, the light water reactors. The first one, as Roger said, started construction in 1954 with the Navy and Westinghouse. And at the tail end, Westinghouse went bankrupt in large part because of these two reactors. And Georgia, which came in $20 billion over budget, took, 15 years. And then the next door in South Carolina, nobody ever talks about this. They tried to build two reactors in South Carolina at VC Summer. They put in $9 billion, which is what they spent on the Webb telescope, for God's sakes, and wound up with two big holes in the ground and nothing. And it's never going to operate. Of VC Summer. I mean, there's no there there. So, and as Roger said, there are no more large reactors under construction in the United States for the first time in 70 years. But there are, these If somebody's on some kind of acid, building small mythological reactors, which are all on paper, and they've admitted they can't get the first one operating in the commercial realm until 2030. That's 6 years from now. And if the schedule starts and goes the way the first generation of reactors was, they'll probably be more like 12 or 15 years. And meanwhile, there's nothing. They're all talking about nuclear power fighting global warming. There aren't any that are being built. And the ones that are operating, as Kevin will tell you, are a nightmare. So go ahead, Kevin. Then we want to go after you to Ron Leonard. We want to talk with Ron about renewables and the realities of especially the new generation of battery storage. But Kevin, please go ahead. You're always the best dressed on the phone, by the way. So it's really good to see you.
Yeah, I've got my radioactive waste is not your friend ball cap on from the Snake River Alliance out in Idaho. So,
Great.
I mean, Harvey and Roger have done a great job kind of laying things out. And congratulations, Roger, on the op-ed in the Detroit Free Press. It's very timely. Roger mentioned there was this love fest at Palisades on March 27th, you know, the eve of the 45th anniversary of the Three Mile Island meltdown. The governor of Michigan, the energy secretary, Holtec, host this love fest at Palisades about how they're going to bring it back and restart it and build small modular reactors. And DOE announced the first $1.5 billion in loans towards the restart. But as has been mentioned, that's one tenth of what Holtec is asking for. They're asking for a grand total of $15.7 billion. The breakdown is $8.3 billion for the restart scheme. And then on the SMR side, it's $7.4 billion. And Roger mentioned the per restored job figure at Palisades for this restart. If you divide $8.3 billion by 280 restored jobs, which is the latest figure that Holtec's been using, that's a figure of $29 million, nearly $30 million per restored job. And Roger got a hold of a figure from Michigan. State subsidies to create jobs in Michigan last year averaged $29,000 per created job. So it's a nice ballpark round figure of it'll cost 1,000 times more money to create to restore a job at Palisades than it costs to create a job in other economic sectors in Michigan. So these are absurd giveaways by the public to this criminal corporation, Holtec. And Roger mentioned the strangeness, the oddity that they're drawing their line in the sand at Palisades. Palisades has been a lemon since it opened in 1971. In fact, the original owner, Consumers Power, back then sued the construction firm, the architect engineer Bechtel. They sued him for $300 million back in the early 1970s. That is a huge amount of money when you adjust for inflation to today's dollars. And then they settled for something like $13 million. It was an indication that Palisades was messed up to begin with. And sure enough, they had like a 50% capacity factor throughout the 1970s. So they were only making half the electricity they had promised, which is pretty bad. And then just another snapshot in time after Fukushima in 2011, Palisades had a horrible operational track record. They had five unplanned shutdowns in 2012. And I'll give an example. One of the worst ones was a worker almost got electrocuted, cut off half the power to the control room, which is not good when you lose half the power to the control room. What could have happened, and this is a segue to one of the major safety issues at Palisades, is inadvertently the emergency core cooling system could have been activated in that electrical chaos created by this near electrocution in the control room. And if that had happened, all this rosy talk, all this optimistic computer modeling, all these rosy hypotheses about how the embrittled reactor pressure vessel at Palisades is just fine to keep operating as is could have been tested in an instant if the emergency core cooling system had been activated in 2012. It was September of 2012 when this incident occurred. It's like a hot glass under cold water, except the metal of the reactor pressure vessel is at a ton of pressure per square inch. And what that cold water supply could do is fracture the vessel through wall. You would inevitably have a core meltdown. The last line of defense would be the containment structures, which at Fukushima we saw fail times three. The containments failed times three at Fukushima. Three meltdowns, three containment failures, massive releases of hazardous radioactivity into the environment of Japan, into the Pacific Ocean, into the air. At Palisades, I mean, Arne Gundersen, who is our expert witness at Palisades for the past decade, wrote an essay because we were already engaged at Palisades, in 2014. What if there were a Fukushima scale catastrophe at Palisades? He pointed out that the Pacific Ocean is 30 times more voluminous in terms of water than the Great Lakes. It would be a global catastrophe because the Great Lakes are 21% of the entire world's surface freshwater. They are 84% of North America's surface freshwater. They are 95% of our country's surface freshwater. 40 million plus people draw their drinking water from the Great Lakes in 8 US states, 2 Canadian provinces, and a very large number of indigenous nations. That's what's being played with here. And so it's just really ironic that, as has been mentioned, Holtec, which has never operated a reactor, has never built a reactor, is asking for more than $15 billion to restart one of the most dangerous reactors in this country that's now been closed for almost 2 years and wants to build two small modular reactors, which aren't small. They're 300 megawatts electric each, which is 4.5 times as big as Big Rock Point up north in Michigan, which was one of the dirtiest, radiologically dirtiest reactors in the country. 3 million curies released to the environment during so-called routine operations, but they broke fuel in the core, experimenting with mixed oxide plutonium fuel. Huge releases. And 300 megawatts electric is 4.5 times as big as Fermi Unit 1, which had a partial core meltdown on October 5th, 1966. And we almost lost Detroit. So these are not small reactors. When they actually go to build them, they will not be modular because they will ad hoc depart from the blueprints. They do it every single time they build a reactor. Even at Vogtle Units 3 and 4, they departed from the designs. And look what happened. Instead of the Nuclear Energy Institute's estimate in 2001 that a new reactor would cost $2.5 billion to build, by 10 years later, by 2012, it was no, it's going to cost $7.5 billion, they admitted. But look what it's actually cost, more than $17.5 billion per reactor at those 2 units in Georgia. Total waste at summer units 2 and 3 that low-income African-American families will be paying for on their electric bills, something like 20 to 25% of ratepayers' electric bills in South Carolina are paying for these two dead reactors that will never operate. We had a similar experience in Michigan at Midland. Two large-scale reactors that thankfully never fired up. One was 90% complete, the other was 50% complete, not unlike the summer fiasco decades later. The largest infrastructure fiasco in Michigan history at Midland. And Roger may remember the figure, billions of dollars of 1980s dollars lost at Midland. So, just to maybe close on all the doom and gloom talk, we have a proud history of anti-nuclear activism in Michigan. The father of the anti-nuclear movement in the United States, Leo Goodman, an attorney at the United Auto Workers, persuaded the union to challenge Fermi One on the safety risks. It went all the way to the Supreme Court, where the UAW lost by a 7-2 vote. And not too long after that, a couple, 3 years later, partial meltdown at Fermi One. Leo Goodman was right. The UAW was right. Fast forward to Midland, Mary Sinclair, and a groundswell of anti-nuclear activism led to the blocking of Midland when it was discovered that, like the Leaning Tower of Pisa, Midland was sinking into the ground, safety significant buildings. And, fast forward to Palisades. I mean, we shut Palisades in 2022. The joke is, how many times do we have to shut Palisades? Because we shut it multiple times. We shut it in May of 2022. We shut it later in November when the Department of Energy rejected Holtec's request for $2 billion in civil nuclear credits. Unfortunately, here they come again. I mean, I would praise Governor Granholm back in the year 2010 for her offshore wind plans in Michigan. There was a report out of Michigan State University, the Land Use Institute, more than 300,000 megawatts electric of offshore wind potential in the Great Lakes. But we don't want the Great Lakes paved in wind turbines. So Granholm, Governor Granholm, had an advisory committee. James Clift, the executive director of Michigan Environmental Council, was on it. I caught his presentation at a renewable energy festival in Southfield in summer of 2010. They had carefully, with two dozen or more criteria, things like don't build a wind turbine on top of a fish hatchery ground in the Great Lakes. Don't build it on top of historical shipwrecks. Don't build it where the view shed will be destroyed. And they chose three places in the Great Lakes to concentrate on. that already had industrial port facilities. Southern Lake Michigan with Gary, Indiana, for God's sake, down there. Extreme Northern Lake Michigan, and then where Saginaw Bay empties out into Lake Huron. Those were the places they were looking at to build offshore wind under Governor Granholm. Apparently, she's forgotten all about all this now that she's energy secretary, because it seems the name of the game is restarting zombie reactors at Palisades, building small modular reactors, which are mythological. So that's the predicament we find ourselves in. Just real quick, last Wednesday, we had an emergency enforcement petition meeting with the NRC about how Holtec is looting the decommissioning trust fund at Palisades massively, but they're doing it at all their decommissioning sites, maybe nowhere worse than Palisades, which isn't even decommissioning, which makes it all the more egregious. And that's what that meeting was about. We blew them out of the water, but it's meaningless because we have a 0.5% chance of prevailing. That's the history of these emergency enforcement petitions. And now on Wednesday, the NRC is jealous that DOE and the governor held a love fest at Palisades in late March. So they're going to hold their own love fest. They're going to have a half hour open house in Benton Harbor with posters to show off. Then they're going to end the open house. So if you're in person attending, you're going to have to scramble to get on the virtual meeting, which is where the, you know, the heart of the meeting is going to be, where they're going to bamboozle the public about how great an idea this is and how on top of safety they are. They're not. It's not. We will resist as best we can, which is boiling down to late 2024. With our legal team, we're going to try to intervene. We've already been told once to go jump in a Great Lake. We're going to keep trying to stick our foot in there and prevent this juggernaut from going off the cliff. But end of this year, NRC is ready to pull the trigger. August 2025, Palisades wants to restart Palisades. The latest news, Holtec admitted they're not going to replace the steam generators. They're not even going to replace the tubes that are problematic. They're just going to go forward with the steam generators they have that have needed replacement for over 20 years. So that's what we're getting out of Holtec.
Well, I will say the two of the worst crises that the nuclear industry has faced, Three Mile Island and Chernobyl, happened immediately, well, with basically new reactors. And so what they're taking here is a 50-year-old reactor at Palisades, which is, I love the fact that they've already sold parts out of there. I mean, it's like you got a 50-year-old car in your front yard. It's up on blocks. You've been selling parts. And then you want to put it back on the road. It's utterly insane. And what makes it even more insane, and this is the key, is that the renewable revolution now, Solartopia, has made all this moot. I mean, as Roger has said, the immense renewable potential in Michigan between wind and solar has completely undercut the whole thing in terms of cost. So I want to get to Ron Leonard. Ron is one of the great founders and pioneers in the green energy industry. And one of the things that Roger talked to me earlier was that he was challenged about blackouts. And I told him that in California, we've had twice now, privately owned as well as, you know, large scale batteries have prevented blackouts that were almost in progress. Can you tell us about that, Ron Leonard?
Well, it's actually even more interesting in that large systems certainly are in place in California, big batteries that are sitting there right this second, and they're designed to prevent the grid from failing when the electricity system goes wonky and the voltage spikes happen and all that sort of bad stuff occurs when it's 100 degrees out. But California had this very interesting rule that says if the price of electricity goes above a dollar, you got to drain the batteries. So what does the utility do? Drains the batteries at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. Oh, so what happens at 7:30 at night? We need the power. The batteries are empty. What do we do? Well, what we do in California and what we did twice in California was call on 1.8 million solar roofs. A few of them also had their own batteries, and that saved the grid from collapsing completely at least twice that we know of. Now, just look at that in terms of dollars and cents. That's a big contribution that people who took money out of their bank put solar on their roof and gave back to the ratepayers of California and the industries and businesses in California every time they saved them from the entire grid collapsing. Now, I'm not really saying that the grid operators are, oh, I don't know, neglectful for not thinking about this, but doing it twice? What the heck are they thinking?
So as Roger said, Mark Jacobson says that we have quite a substantial reality now of renewables running 100% of the grid in California. We saw the chart that Steve just put up shows that the battery capacity in California now is two or three times the capacity of Diablo Canyon. Diablo Canyon together, the two reactors, is about 2,200 megawatts, and we see more than 5,000, I believe, in terms of battery storage. I also mentioned to Roger this development now, Ron, that you know about, which is the on the near horizon, way before SMRs, which can't come online until 2030. There's a major shift going on in battery production, and sodium is now, I won't say replacing, but in the law, because it's too heavy, it's heavier than lithium. But large backup batteries, industrial size, are starting to transition now to sodium, which is, I believe, an order of magnitude cheaper than lithium. Is that right?
Well, sodium is more available on the earth. But as you know, Harvey, we have found vast amounts recently of lithium in California, one in a water source and one in an empty volcano source. That's enough to provide all the batteries that we really need for the next 25 years. The good news is batteries, no matter what the manufactured product is used in them, are now cheap enough. And the magic dollar figure is $100 per kilowatt hour. So we now can use various sources of storage to ride out any outage or blackout or voltage drop or what have you. And then there is the real argument that they keep rolling out on us. Oh, what happens? You can't use renewables because at nighttime, the sun doesn't shine, and what happens if the wind doesn't blow, and what do we do? Oh, well, guess what? We thought about that. Surprise. And a guy who I know, his name is Mark Perez, who did his doctoral thesis on this issue and analyzed the largest grid in the United States that extends from the Canadian border to the Gulf of Mexico. It's the MISO. And the numbers actually work with 100% renewable energy, just like you're talking about in California, but they actually work 24 hours a day. And we do that through various trickery, but the fact is that renewable energy is so cheap right now. Batteries are widely available. Wind, solar, hydro, biomass all complement each other. And guess what? It all works. Why are we jumping backwards to technology that, oh, I don't know, sort of
we're losing you, Ron.
Another power plant around here, Shoreham, that cost $6 billion in Long Island and was really not operational for more than a week. And the ratepayers here are still paying it off. They're, in fact, after decades right now, I think they owe $400 million. So if anybody would like to pick up on that bill that we have way back when for all these dysfunctional behemoths that we entrusted on our future, I think we should do something smarter, which is proven technology, renewable technology that happens to be clean and doesn't leave us with eons of waste material that are, you know, we're giving this to our children onto the future. This is not right. This is not sensible. This is not how a rational society should run.
Well, I just read a piece by Michael Schellenberger, who's an apologist for the nuclear industry. We refer to him as Scheisskopf, complaining about the so-called waste from renewables, from solar panels and windmill turbine blades and stuff like that. I mean, the thing, Michael, is it's not plutonium and it's not radioactive and it's all recyclable.
And you hear so recycled, yes.
The solar industry is going to have to do a better job of recycling its stuff. I will say I've been looking at Los Angeles. Los Angeles does have a plan that's so to go 100 so-called green by 2035. But they don't, this plan from the DWP, Department of Water and Power, does not talk about rooftop solar in any formidable way. I mean, we have, and by the way, the National Renewable Energy Lab has done a study of usable rooftops in the United States. It's an enormous number. I don't have it in front of me, but I could get it easily. But it's many millions of acres
You're
of
breaking.
what's happening now, as Roger knows very well, and Roger and Kevin have written about. And by the way, I want to welcome John Steiner is with us, and also Camilla Reese. And Camilla has set up for the second half hour. It's about 20 minutes from now. We're going to do a really deep dive on EMF. If you want to ask questions about what we're talking about now, please do, the new Solartopia. But the bottom line is, Los Angeles, I hate it when I see big solar farms going on off in the desert. I don't think there should be any new solar panels installed except on rooftops, with one exception, which would be the aqueducts and the reservoirs. The aqueducts should be covered with solar.
So what you're talking about is a very interesting phenomenon, which is that we have now been able to calculate what the percentage of energy would be if we used up sort of things like you're describing, unused land, a rooftop, a carport, or what have you. And if you look actually at LA and you just look at rooftops, and you just look at big rooftops. Well, those big rooftops would provide, if covered with solar, 60% of the entire power that LA needs. Think about that. 60% of the power that LA needs.
Right, and we also want to talk about the stadiums, Dodger Stadium, SoFi Stadium. There's a soccer stadium. There's Crypto downtown. The basketball arena. All of them have huge parking lots, which should be covered with solar. And the plan doesn't talk about that. We are in the middle, folks, of a very big war against solar. As Roger said, there's a deep fear in the fossil nuclear industry that they're about to be wiped out. Which they are, because solar is so much cheaper and wind than fossil nuclear, and there's just no comparison. And as Kevin has pointed out, we're at the end of the nuclear power road on light water reactors, and there'd be the beginning of this small mythological reactor push, of which there are none. So for the next 6 years, until 2030, there's no possible contribution that new nuclear power plants can make to fighting global warming. As if, but the problem is they cause global warming anyway. So, Roger, I'm assuming that you've looked at the wind power capacity in Michigan and the solar. I will say that what happened in Ohio was that we had $4 billion in private money. This was private money poised to build independent, free market, utility market windmills in northern Ohio. Northern Ohio, what we call the North Coast, is great for wind because it has good, steady winds, not as strong as inside in the lakes or in the Dakotas down to Texas, but strong enough. There's transmission there, which is a big issue, but that area is crisscrossed with transmission. The land is flat. The farmers want the windmills. I know. I was up there selling them, and they wanted to. If you're a farmer, you put a windmill on your land, you get $8,000 to $10,000 a year for doing nothing. It's you get they you get the lease payments, and which they need. And so all that I assume is available in Michigan as well. And but what they did was in 2014, the legislature came in and put a single sentence in the Ohio Code. And that sentence had to do with the setbacks. It made it much more virtually impossible to build a commercially viable wind project on private land in Ohio. And they killed $4 billion worth of industry, which would have created thousands of jobs and given Ohio incredibly cheap energy. And they have not even, and they've been killing also windmills in the lakes. There are no major offshore windmills in the lakes. Lake Erie is just an incredible resource, as is Lake Michigan, and that's what the industry has been doing, and that's
So
what your article
by pricing ourselves out of the market on energy, essentially, we become more and more dependent on these other sources that are A, too expensive, B, they have certain risks. There's also transportation risks. And as we've seen, the hidden cost of nuclear power in the Ukraine, where the world's worst nuclear disaster in Chernobyl, and now the other plant that's being attacked, there's safety risks on top of it. So obviously, it's a lose-lose situation from the beginning. But on top of everything else, it makes us economically less competitive with other parts of the world that are going with renewables. And the other problem is the long lead times. I mean, you mentioned the plants that never got built, like Midland, that lost $4.5 billion. The huge old bankruptcies, overruns, and all that sort of thing. But combined, all of these things make America much less competitive. And of course, states like Ohio, when they're trying to attract industry, as energy prices go up, it's a double whammy because it negatively impacts ratepayers, and it also affects the ability of the state to attract new industry that don't want to pay these ridiculous rates. And that was all part of the scandal that I think, Harvey, you need to talk about, because there was another death last week in Ohio. I think you need to talk about the chairman.
Yeah, so we mentioned this. I did put a piece out. It's at freepress.org. Thank you for that, Roger. As we know, the FBI found a $61 million bribe. I'll repeat that, a $61 million bribe. And this is not conspiracy. Well, it is conspiracy theory. It happens to be true, which was given to the Speaker of the Ohio House, who's now doing 20 years in federal prison. And there was a suicide. They nailed about, I don't know, four or five guys, and it was all guys, who were involved in taking this money from the utility in order to get a $1 billion bailout for the Davis, Bessie, and Perry nuclear plants. And one of the guys actually, well, let's put it this way. He turned up dead, and it's been said it was a suicide. You know, whenever there's a so-called suicide, and when you got $60 million of bribes floating around, you really got to say alleged suicide or likely suicide or whatever. And then this guy, Steve's put up here, Sam Randazzo. I knew him. I would go to hearings downtown at the State House, and he'd always be there. He was a lobbyist for the fossil nuclear industry and for the big energy users in the state. And he was always friendly, very nice guy, very smart. And we would kind of shake hands and laugh because we were totally on the opposite sides. But a week ago today, he turned up dead in a warehouse he owned in Columbus. He was facing, again, you know, 20, God knows how many years. He had 20 counts of state and federal of corruption. Mike DeWine, who himself is incredibly corrupt, this governor, put Sam as the head of the Public Utilities Commission. I mean, that's like putting the fox in front of the hen house after the fox has already eaten half the hens. I mean, it's ridiculous, you know? And nobody could believe that DeWine did this, but he did. And yeah, no hens left. And now we got, and this was the lieutenant governor. Took $1 million for his campaign before the bailout, just before the bailout, this guy. And I mean, it's shameless up there. So you're wondering how much did he, who paid how much to the California legislature? Then when Gavin Newsom goes waltzing in, strong arms everybody to bail out Diablo Canyon for more than $1 billion, and then gets the PUC to just absolutely decimate the solar industry in California. And this is in the Wall Street Journal. I mean, they are killing rooftop solar as fast as they possibly can in California. It's insane. And as we know, LA could be one big solar collector, one big solar farm. You know, between the stadiums and the large warehouses, you know, great sun in L.A., as I can, I'm sure you've all heard. There's no reason to not do this. So we're at the turning point here. And
there's a reason to do it, which is that unlike the rest of California, L.A. is a muni, and they are not getting strangled by the law that is stopping solar roofs on people's buildings, solar roofs on multifamily housing, and now community shared solar in California. So,
right. And they're doing
that would be big.
Well, the governor is doing his best to kill it. And
Sure.
I want to know from the FBI who's paying them off. We have yet to come up to talk. We've talked about this a lot. Other people in California. What is Gavin Newsom's motivation for killing the solar industry and for bailing out Diablo Canyon? I mean, there's no visible a reason for him to do this. We theorize that he's going to run for president. He wants all the money from the big backers of PG&E. And by the way, the president, the person who runs PG&E, Pacific Gas and Electric, which has been convicted of 92 counts of federal manslaughter because of their mishandling of the grid, of gas burners in San Bruno and transmission wires in Northern California. The head of PG&E gets $52 million a year payment. So anyway, listen, raise your hands. We're going to go in a minute to Wendy Lederman to fill us in on abortion in Florida. And then we're going to go to Camilla Rees, who's got an incredible panel lined up for EMF in the second hour. Tatanka, go ahead. Tatanka, you're up near
I
Diablo.
think Ron and Kevin probably know who most of the board members of PG&E are, what their occupations are. You want to share that?
Well,
Well,
you can do it. Tell us.
no, I'm sorry, I don't know that.
Do you know, Ron?
Well, we do have this little figure that says that Newsom benefited from $208,400 in political contributions from PG&E in 2018. I wonder why that money came to him.
Right. Well, give us the answer, Tatanka. What are they?
Well, I don't have any special information. I just know that hedge fund managers and all kinds of other wealthy people on the board have been donors to his campaigns in the past. And I just assume he's got a big national presence now. And if he wants to run for office, he's bankrolled. And to suddenly turn to be the champion of solar and then to turn against it and to be there on the record when Jerry Brown decommissioned, had the plan for decommissioning Diablo, and to turn right around and to do it on the last day before they all went on a vacation, smells.
It's more than smells, it radiates. And thank you
Oh.
for that. Listen, we got 48 people and we've been joined by Myra Reese. And Myra, thank you for coming to us and thank you for your incredible fortitude in terms of your medical struggles. And we're really honored to have you with us. As you are, Carl Grossman's with us, who was witness to the collapse, actually partly culpable in the collapse of the Shoreham nuclear project. $6 billion there, $9 billion at BC Summer, $4.5 billion at Midland. I always loved Midland because it was literally sinking. I mean, what are these people thinking about? You build a nuclear plant on a swamp? Come on, guys. Okay, Kevin, then we'll go to Myla. And anybody else has a hand? We do want to give Wendy a little time to talk about the situation in Florida. Go ahead,
I just wanted to respond. Oh, I'm sorry.
Oh, Kevin, yeah, go ahead. Kevin, then Myla,
I
please.
just wanted to respond to Tatanka. Governor Whitmer in Michigan is very similar to Newsom. Newsom's worse because, like you said, he did a 180. Whitmer didn't really have a position that she talked about, but I think it is, when they did it in early 2022, it wasn't clear that Biden was going to run again. So they were positioning themselves to run for president. And I mean, Newsom debated DeSantis, for God's sake, right? So he was really out. So I don't know. There's like this unwritten rule that if you want to run for president as a Democrat, you got to be head over heels in love with nuclear power. We're sure seeing that from Biden right now,
And
unfortunately.
the polls are showing that he would be the best person to debate Trump for the Democrats.
Who, Gavin Newsom?
Gavin Newsom, yeah.
Oh, God. Well, again, Trump will have to wake up. I mean, he's taking a nap in his trial right now. Myla, what
Well,
from you?
I raised my hand initially because I wanted to answer hedge funds. And I only know that because of Tatanka, but Tatanka, you beat me to it. But also, the Democratic Party has been, Obama had that all of the above, including nuclear. Claire McCaskill, unfortunately, a lot of people in the dominant corporate part of the Democratic Party are in love with nuclear, and we know that Obama's great advisor, David Axelrod, was very involved with Exelon, which is one of our one of the nuclear giants in this great land of ours. So anyway, yes, unfortunately, the Democrats haven't. Many Democrats have not yet woken up to the horrors of nuclear power.
Can I just add something here?
Yeah, go ahead, Roger. Then we'll go to Paul Newman.
Kevin and I have been working on this number, but it's at least $1 million a week as we're sitting here. The handouts continue. In the state of Michigan, every legislator, Democrat and Republican and independent, if we have any independents, voted in favor of the Palisades bailout restart. So that shows you that they have effectively contributed. Now, Harvey has given a worst case situation scenario in Ohio where there was out and out bribery. So the question is, why do all these politicians accept this money from this incredibly dangerous form of energy that's incredibly overpriced? And the answer is that I think, at least in Michigan, Granholm herself went one step farther. Her campaign manager, Kevin, am I right about this? Worked was an executive that she borrowed from Mishcon. Is that right, Kevin?
Yeah. Consumers Energy loaned a senior executive to Granholm for her reelection campaign.
So they aren't just donating money or, you know, in the case of Ohio, bribing or running campaigns. They have complete control. I mean, the Price Anderson renewal was just signed by Biden. So they have effectively become one of the largest sources of campaign contributions on all sides. They don't just back Trump or Biden. They back everybody all the way down to the county level. Isn't that right, Kevin?
The
city council campaigns and county campaigns?
Yeah, it's not a company town at Palisades. It's a company region, three counties.
Let me give you a small example, because this happened at the event that I went to. That was the announcement that the two governors made of the restart of Palisades. There were some people in the front row who were concerned about thyroid cancer, a high rate, and they actually had written to the NRC to do an investigation. And this is a summer community. It's a resort community. So nobody really much lives there except during the warm months. And so the NRC decided to do a door-to-door research survey. They mailed surveys about this thyroid cancer question to all the residents of this couple hundred people who live there. And they mailed them in the winter when nobody was there and the mail got returned. I mean, that's how sophisticated they are. And the point is that if you went to this hearing, there were people that were raising posters, you know, about this question. Please answer our question. You know, please do a survey. Give us information. These people were they were asked to leave. So then they picketed on a road outside the plant, and the police came, took their ID, and told them to never set foot again on this property. They literally kicked them off the roadway, you know, miles away from the plant. I mean, that's a company town.
Yeah. Right. It's unbelievable. That in the world of stolen elections, by the way, that's called caging. When you mail stuff to people that you know they're not going to be there. All right, we want to talk to Paul Newman. Thank you, Roger. Paul Newman is a energy generator himself in L.A. We've got solar panels on his roof. Go ahead, Paul.
I just wanted to say that I know we were talking about Newsom earlier, and I wanted to pop that in. I saw the debate with Ron DeSantis, and I hate Ron DeSantis, but he brought up a whole bunch of issues that California is going through, and it looked, you know, and Newsom couldn't answer half of them, and it looked to me like Newsom, if this was a contest, he wasn't winning the hearts and minds of the Fox viewers, and I was very disgusted, actually. So I just want to say that, you know, that, and I think some other things are going on with Newsom. You know, I mean, here's a guy that had health care in San Francisco for all the waiters. I mean, what happened to him? You know, so I just wanted to bring that up, that I don't think he did well in that debate. And then meanwhile, I'm hearing progressive radio, all these people commenting about, oh, he kicked DeSantis's ass. Well, I saw it, and he didn't do very well. You know, and they just brought up one topic where he did, and that was it, you know, which had to do with the books, banning the books, and that was it. So
losing Ron DeSantis is like losing to the 1980 Mets, you know, I mean, come on. That's amazing. Well, you get kudos for sitting through the debate. We got what, 54 people with us now. People are lining up, I think, for the EMF thing. And this was an incredible session. Thank you, Roger and Kevin and Ron. And Tatanka, go ahead, and then we're going
to... Just one question I don't know the answer to. Who wrote the infrastructure bill? And in which rooms? I mean, you can look at where the money went and you can surmise it. But who was it that was responsible for that?
Who knows? Oh, you know, I mean...
I don't know. I mean, find
out because I know the industry, the fossil fuel industry, had a 50-year plan, and in the 2020 time period, they were going to feather in all renewables to control the whole world's energy supply. That came out of Stanford Research Institute in 1976. So
well, here we are.
I think it's like a Titanic trying to turn, and they're still in the past. You know,
here, near and far, wherever you are. This has been a great session. Make sure, Roger, that you send out your the piece from the Free Press when it runs tomorrow.
Yeah.
And you know, we got to make this transition quick, and we want to thank Camilla Reese for setting up the upcoming panel. One thing she's done is warned us that rooftop solar we can't do it with smart meters. I've been told, by the way, I'm working with a guy here in LA to do my house, and he says that the campaign against smart meters being combined with solar in LA, at least, has been very effective, and that people are aware of the issue. It's very important. Roger and Kevin, we won't meet next week, but a couple of weeks from now, you'll have your article out, and we're going to talk more about the new Solartopia. So thank you so much, both of you guys. Tatanka, Ron, we'll keep on this case. I do want to quickly give Wendy 2 minutes to talk about the situation in Florida on abortion, because it's a big one. And then we're going to go to our EMF panel, which Camilla has put together. Wendy, you want to give us a quick report there? Thank you.
Sure, thank you.
Roger, point, and Kevin, both put your contacts in the chat, please, real quick. Thank you, guys. No nukes and go blue. Go ahead, Wendy, real quick, and then we go to Camilla.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, and if my... Just cut off my video if my signal goes bad. Thank you. So, thank you. So, Florida just passed. The court upheld a 6-week ban on abortions in Florida, and the same day it struck down the challenge to the ballot amendment that we have a chance to vote on. That got well over 1 million signatures. So we will have a chance to bring Roe versus Wade and protections back to the state if people vote in November. If not, at the end of April starts a 6-week ban where most women obviously don't know that they're pregnant at that point. They will have to set up 2 separate in-person appointments with an abortion provider if their like life is in danger, if they were raped, that sort of situation.
Please catch the rest of the show at grassrootsep.org, and please like and subscribe to our YouTube channel at Green Grassroots Election Protection Coalition. Thanks.